This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Peter McGillivray
and Jane Walton.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Peter, you were born, I believe, in 1930.
Yes, the 8th of February in a Wairarapa summer.
Yeah.
I was the last of six, one every year for 5 years, which was customary then, and then a gap of 5 years, and then me.
Yeah.
And I'm very pleased I'm here because I've led a charmed life, really. Uh-huh. One of my brothers told me that. He was a big raw-boned farmer and claimed I'd never done a decent day's work in my life, just sitting talking to people. Yes.
Well, yeah, you can get paid for that.
Yes, you do.
It can be valuable, you know, brains rather than brawn. Okay, so what sort
In fact, we had a celebration for my birthday a couple of weeks ago, and fortunately it was out at Whorirata at Massey in the same room that I'd delivered the word for about 30-odd years at Whorirata. So
were you teaching at Massey University Agricultural College?
Oh, well, I was at the Agricultural College. I first started in 1949 as a student at Massey.
Okay.
And there were 26 of us in the class. In those days, you had to do your first year of the degree at one of the four main universities. So yeah. I spent the previous year at Victoria in Wellington.
Okay.
Where I met just a couple of my future colleagues at Massey. So in 49 we started, 26 of us.
Can I just ask, was the Agricultural College part of Victoria University?
No,
was
it part of the University of New Zealand.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and it was part of, its origin was with Auckland University and Victoria.
Okay.
And when it was established in 1928, or I think the establishment was actually 1926, but it got into business in 1928, Perrin had come from Wellington and Ridditt from Auckland.
Yes. Ah, okay, so that's, and they named buildings after them now. Mm. Was it very big then?
No. There happens to be a calendar for this year, which was a record of the paintings of Jack Tetley. Mm. He was our zoology lecturer, but also an artist. And I, quite by chance, I saw in the paper that this was a calendar for the year, and I got one from the library. His wife was also a more notable artist than he was, Marion Tetley.
Okay.
She was well known in the artistic world back in the 50s.
All right. Mm. So what was the Agricultural College like? You could do the whole breadth of agriculture?
Well, the agriculture, it was coming out of the war, struggling for students, and Perrin, we didn't think that Perrin was cut a big swath academically, but he was a very good administrator, I learned later.
Yeah.
And we owe a lot to him to keeping the place going, getting students from all over, not only for lectures, but also to keep the hostels full. And I had a sister-in-law who was the... she was roped in as a milk tester. And they were mainly girls who would go around testing dairy herds.
Yeah.
And they would have their little buggy, their little gig, horse-drawn gig, and their buckets would be on the gig, and they'd go from farm to farm. And there's a delightful story about one of the herd testers out at Linton who were doing a friend of mine. He was an early student there in about 1942, but he related this to me later, where the horse got a fright on the way to their farm to do the milk testing. And there was buckets galore, and the horse took off, and the milk tester didn't know what was happening. But that was part of the thing in those days. And the milk testing, the milk testing was due to Prof Ridditt, who was the 2IC at Massey. He was the brains of the outfit, and very much into dairying. And we owe quite a lot to the foundation that he and some others, like Arthur Ward, set for the New Zealand dairy industry.
But is Perrin the Perrin in Perrindale?
Yes, okay. He is. And that happened at one of the sheep farming meetings. Every year, in order to promote Massey, they had a sheep farmers meeting and a dairy farmers meeting. Mm-hmm. And quite way back in the 40s, they were held in the wool shed down near what was the poultry farm. Quite a big shed there. And later on, it moved to the Opera House in Palmerston North when it got to be quite a big thing. Mm-hmm. But the dairy farmers meeting was also held in the sheep farm pavilion. And it was quite interesting in that a subsequent Vice-Chancellor, Alan Stewart, then a lecturer, showed up at the sheep farmers meeting, and one of the breeders from the dairy industry was to give a talk. And that really set Alan Stewart on fire, because the breeders, they would pick their cattle on how they looked. Mm-hmm. Had very little to do with production. And it was at that time that production was gradually taking over from the strong breeders' feelings.
Okay. Mm. Oh. So what was student life in 1949?
Oh, student life was quite something. We had the old hostel, which was brought up to Palmerston North from the Trentham military camp. And it sits to the left of the refectory, if you're looking at the refectory. There was the Pink Hostel, and the story behind that was that Perrin, who was a brigadier, I think, in the army, and had the Croix de Guerre from France, he was instrumental in getting that brought up there. And then there was the Pink Hostel across the campus. Well, that was built by the army, and I think, I could be corrected, I think the army used it for 3 months, and Massey have used it for 50 years. Yeah. And then there was also, on the next level up, was the rehab buildings, A Hostel, B Hostel, and C Hostel. And they were army barracks, which were brought in, I don't know from where. And when I arrived at Massey, I occupied room A2 in the A hostels. And
was that as staff, you mean, later, or as a student?
As a student.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
And later on, I had a bit to do with the hostels, and I used to muse to myself, when I arrived there, it was a barracks, a very plain building with a long corridor, and rooms on either side, which would take two people. So I was lumped in with my Wairarapa College friend, Brian Burridge, and he had the two top drawers of the middle thing, and I had the two bottom drawers. I had a little wardrobe on this side, he had his little wardrobe there, subdivided by a mirror, and that was it. No locks on the doors, which I think are they're an abomination now, those locks. Because what happened with us, you got your room and then you all mixed together. And so you're in and out of one another's rooms. So today when I look at the hostels and a student comes along, gets his key, locks himself in his room, and not so much interaction. However, that's just looking in the past.
Okay. So where were the students from? Was it mainly young men or many ex-military or straight from school?
Well, not all. There was the rehabilitation people. It was going in full force then. And here was I, a young, by the time I got to Massey, 19-year-old callow farm youth. You get to Massey and here you're mixing with people who've been to the war. Real men that had faced the enemy. And even one of our class, he had joined the Navy, volunteer reserve or something, and he was appointed to a ship which had to go round the world to sort of prove that it was a decent ship. So at age, he was a couple of years older than me, 2 or 3 years older, he'd been round the world. and he was in the next room. He was in I-3.
So that was in his after-the-war military service?
Yes, yes. Okay. So that was quite something. And
So how did they view young lads like you?
Oh, well, there was no difference. They didn't look down on us at all. But I think that we looked up to them. Mm-hmm. And, for example, one of my best friends in my year, he was an Australian. And that was the establishment of a thing called the Victorian Bursars. Four Australians would come over to New Zealand each year to take up dairy industry interests, because they were short of dairy instruction in Victoria mainly. So this fellow was one of the second group of Victorian bursars to come over, and he was bald, and so we were a bit interested in this. And I think he became bald because his contribution to the war effort in Australia was to put his hand into a bunch of mosquitoes and see what happened for malaria. That's the story I have in any case. Wow. And he's still going, so the malaria didn't win.
Okay.
Was that the same course that Fred came out for?
The dairy course? Yes. Well, it was by then, it was the diploma in dairying. Mm. Different course, but an Australian. So there was no division between these army people, but they were a very interesting group of people.
Yeah.
Really interesting, yes.
Yeah. Were there many female students?
No, there was about 12 girls, and they were known as the Mog Girls. Because they lived in Majini House.
Ah, okay.
Majini, because Majini left a bequest to Massey, and they had it as a girls' hostel.
Okay.
And their headquarters was in Majini House, called to honour the person who made the bequest. Mm. But it was also the home of C.J. Munro, who brought rugby to New Zealand.
Yes. Yes.
And is honoured outside Te Manawa. Well, that was C.J. Munro's house.
Okay.
And we jump many, many years forward, and Alan Stewart is the Vice-Chancellor. At the top of the steps, going from the veterinary establishment up the steps to Maori Studies now, just to the side there is a little area set aside with an iron table with the iron inkstand and an iron chair to commemorate the introduction of rugby to New Zealand by C.J. Munro.
Oh, okay.
All nicely rusted up now.
So they're not maintaining it. That's
that's the way it goes.
That's the way it's supposed to be, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I could paint it, maybe. I don't know. So were the female students studying the same thing?
Oh, to get back to the Mog Girls, yes.
Yeah,
well,
in the
main building, as it was then, there was a place with a store, a shop, and there was always a competition for someone to run the shop each year, and a little newsroom where you could read the papers there. So that, apart from the dining room, were the two favourite places to meet up with the Mog Girl of your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of stories about that, where you don't go down, but between Whareroata and what is now the entrance on the Munro Hill, there was a big gully, which has since been a big culvert has been put down the middle, and it's all levelled off.
Yeah, the ring road goes.
But you would walk the Mog Girl home across the gully. So the Mog Girls played quite a part, particularly at meal times. And one who's still with us, Hazel Riseborough, a sheep diploma student, then a wool diploma student, and then a history lecturer, now Dr. Riseborough in Rest Home in Taupo, could well recall where the girls would sit at the table. Sometimes they would have just the girls at the table, then that would be sort of broken up, and there'd be no room left for a girl, and she'd have to go and sit at the boys' table. And the milk jugs, the milk came in a big, I suppose it would be a 12, 15 gallon can. Mm-hmm. And if when the milk ran out, you went over to the milk can, okay. Yeah. And you refilled your jug with a ladle.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So Hazel Riseborough will recall how when the girl was at the table, by the time the milk jug was passed to her, there was just a touch in the bottom, so the jug needed refilling. Mm-hmm. So the girl had to get up and walk the gauntlet over to the big can. With all the boys hooting. Shows you what clowns we were. And she would come back with the milk. But, yes.
And they enjoyed the attention, you think?
Oh, well, the other thing that would happen there would be raids. The hostels would be raided. So the girls' hostel would be raided. And, yes, the... I could recall one raid there of the Mog House, and the matron was disturbed and came down, and what's going on here, and somebody that I just can't quite remember or won't name, he was hiding under the table. So when it was all lined out, the matron, and what are you doing down here? And then the girls would have their revenge. But much later on in the hostels...
Hang on, they would have their revenge.
Raid the boys' hostel, and I can recall
Were the girls sort of super... they had a deadline when they had to be in and the doors were locked and they climbed in through the windows?
I can't recall the regulations then, but they were probably fairly strict.
Yeah.
But I do recall going down... I started off in the rehab hostels... then graduated to a room in the Pink Hostel. And I can recall going down to the Massey main building to lectures one day, and there was the big old gum tree to the right of the main entrance of the what's now the Sir Geoffrey Perrin building, a really big gum tree which had a bit of a lean on it. And the gum tree was absolutely festooned with all the underwear and pyjamas of the male hostels. The girls had got their revenge. Yes, on one occasion.
Right, yeah.
Good girls.
Okay, now were there I know at a later stage with the university there was, what was it called, Process and so on?
Capping week was always a big event in Palmerston.
Yeah, for the agricultural college as well.
Yes. And it's quite remarkable the talent there was amongst those few people.
Thompson.
There might have been 300 in the... when I first went there was about 300 with the total roll of Massey.
Yeah.
They could all fit in one photograph, which you have out on the campus. But Capping Week was a big event. And one that I recall... mentioned that it was Brigadier Perrin. Well... always had a black Labrador. So one little skit in the Opera House was somebody had a black Labrador on stage trying to feed it a bit of something or a stick or a bit of meat, and someone at the other side saying, "Brigadier General, Brigadier General." looking back now, I'm telling you, it's pretty weak now, but it was good stuff then. And the staff would come along because they would know that they would be held to account in Capping Week.
Yeah.
And there was always some... the student would be capped, but then the students would also have a little stunt, providing the student who'd just been capped, providing him with something else relating to his life as a student.
Mm-hmm.
And one, for example, in the year he started off ahead of me and then became our class, was a really well-loved member, Hiwi Taura. And Hiwi Taura was well-known for having water fights.
Mm-hmm.
And he had manned the fire hose on many occasions. So when he graduated, what the students gave him was a water fight.
Did he move on to
Hiwi Tauara became a had a great post-Massey life.
Yes.
Do you remember Hans Stewart?
The name's familiar, yeah.
Oh, yes. He was the first race relations commissioner. Mm. Yes, but he coached a very good rugby player, played for the Maori All Blacks. Not sure who was captain of them or not, but also later on coached counties. Mm. And he'd been in the hospital, demented, for quite a while. And his wife also was a notable person in Maori life then, and they developed a very good relationship with China. New Zealand Maori Chinese company or group or something, still going today. His wife was at a recent reunion of our class that we had. And yes, so as coach of counties, played for counties, coach of counties, and then many years later, when he was in the hospital and counties won the rugby competition, Ranfurly Shield, yeah. Counties won the Ranfurly Shield, so the whole team took the shield down to see Hiwi. Really lovely.
Did he realise what it was?
Oh, probably. Because I was going to visit him one day, and he'd been in the institution a while. His wife said, "Oh, it's good to take a photo." So I took a couple of our photos, because I played in the same team with him. And we looked at the photo, and he really came to life in the photo. Oh, and then I said, "Oh, that's okay," and I stretched out to take the photo. He had a firm grip on that photo. No, you don't. Yes.
Okay. So clearly, he was a Maori student at the agricultural. Were there many?
No. Very few. And he was known in the hostel, the pink hostel, as a common room, and a big fire and a stack of wood in the wood box. And a favourite thing was for people to put Hiwi in the wood box. They'd put him in the wood box, and someone would sit on top of it for a while. And he was known as the Great Escaper. He would get out of the wood box, and then they'd try and lock him up somewhere else, and he'd get out of it.
Is that what gave him his rugby skills?
Hiwi was a great fellow, really. Yeah. Held in the highest regard. It took him an extra year to get his degree, and that's how he came to be in our class.
Okay, so then you studied at the agricultural college, and what?
Yes. You did your intermediate at the other places, and then you were joined together by people from Auckland, Christchurch, and Canterbury, and Victoria, and Otago. And one of our class had tried the dentistry degree, was there for a year, and then sensibly gave that up and took up agriculture. Well, he came to Massey armed with the skull that he'd used in dentistry down in Otago, who became known to our class as Sifo Sam. Well, Sifo Sam, he had things painted on the teeth, and he was used in many pranks in the hostels, so that when Owen Stanley came home from his night activities in Palmerston North, and found Sifo Sam in his bed, he really lost it completely with us laughing at the door wave.
So you were doing a three-year course?
It was 1 year at the main universities, and then 3 years at Massey. Yes.
Oh, 4 years altogether.
And 4 years.
So did you came out with a diploma or a degree?
Bachelor of Agricultural Science from the University of New Zealand.
You did broad across the board study
It was, and we were lucky. When I think back now, I think about the early Massey graduates in the 30s. Now, what access did they have to written material, research material? Very, very little.
Was there much of a library?
And noted librarians. But a good library.
So there was a library at the...
Oh, yes, there was a library, and Mary Campbell who had a deep, loud voice, was the noted librarian, and was on good terms with all the students. It was a good library. But to get back to the early Massey, so yeah. I was there in the late 40s, and by then agriculture had come, you know, quite a long way with research in America and Europe and that. But back in the 30s, when I think now, what access did they have to research work? And yet it turned out people of the calibre of C.P. McMeekin, who made his name in Ruakura, world-beating animal scientist, Malcolm M.M. Cooper, Malcolm McGregor Cooper from the Hawke's Bay, Massey's first Rhodes Scholar, went to Britain and became the Dean of Agriculture at Newcastle, and was chastised by the British farming community because he ploughed up a paddock that hadn't been ploughed for yonks, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And, of course, influenced the whole of British agriculture tremendously.
Yeah.
He was known as the Dean of Agriculture. And long time after that, I learned that he used to go down to the BBC by train to talk about agriculture. Going home from the BBC one night, fellow sharing the cabin with him, said, "Oh, forgive me for asking, but I think I saw you on BBC as the Dean of it." "Yes, as a dean. Yes, I do go down there occasionally. But you seem to know a lot about agriculture, although you're a dean." Matt Cooper is a big influence in British agriculture. And a bit later, Cam Percival, the fellow who really got on to facial eczema, all products of Massey in the early days.
But when you say that they didn't have access to material, does that mean there wasn't much published research material around the world?
Well, it was the early days of agriculture, and what you got was covered agriculture from Europe and Britain, animals kept in sheds and that.
Yeah,
but as far as our agriculture, no, very little of it.
Okay.
When did the DSIR start?
That would be much earlier, I would think, than Massey. Would be much earlier.
Okay.
And now, asking that, I think that Bill Hamilton was a Massey graduate. Now, you couldn't quote me on that, but he was a big wheel in the in the early days of the DSIR.
Was there much research done in the 1940s in agriculture here at Massey?
Yes, well, the main building had been built, and it also included, on the bottom floor, on one wing of the bottom floor, was the Dairy Research Institute, and that was headed up by Prof. Riddett. And there was some very good work done there. In fact, I remember, I can quote you a sentence from our Dickie Waters, who was our lecturer in microbiology. "To Whitehead and Hunter of the DRI, we owe our present-day knowledge of the bacteriophage." And in those days, you used to write out all the stuff that the lecturer would give you.
Yeah.
Well, Whitehead was known as Tonk Whitehead. He was a researcher, Dr. Hugh Whitehead, and did world-important work on the bacteriophages, which these days, nowadays, in our current life, are terribly important in handling things that can't be dealt to by antibiotics. So bacteriophages will feature in human health to a great extent.
Okay.
Wow. So that was one lot of research done. Prof. Riddett was, after a visit to Denmark, was responsible, so the story goes, hope it's right, of introducing the electric fence to New Zealand dairying.
Okay. Yeah,
a very simple thing.
Yes, but which he'd observed in Denmark.
Terribly important, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.